Welcome to FIPS Talks, the podcast series of the Foundation for European Progressive Studies. Find out more about us on FIPS-Europe.eu.
Welcome everybody to this new episode of FIPS Talk. I'm David Rinaldi, Director of Studies and Policy at FIPS, the Foundation for European Progressive Studies, and you are listening now to our weekly podcast. This week, we are extremely glad to have with us Michaela Kauer, that is not only the director of the Brussels Liaison Office of the City of Vienna, but also the co-coordinator of the EU Urban Agenda Housing Partnership. And of course, with her, we would like to focus a lot on housing policy and also on what the EU can do on this topic to improve a housing policy at regional and national level. Michaela, happy to have you here with us.
Good to be here with you today.
The very first question that I would like to ask you relates on how our perception on the relevance of housing and the quality of our homes changed in the recent months. Because I think that the COVID has substantially impacted the way in which people look and leave their homes, but also the way in which public authorities understand the relevance of this. So how do you see this, this pandemic changing and impacting the approach to housing policy?
Yeah, I think that's a very important question indeed. And I think that when it comes to housing and the corona pandemic, we have seen a total change in the function of homes in the past year, I must say, nearly now. And the change was about before a home of different qualities, we'll come to that, I hope, also later. A home is a place where you relax, where you learn a bit with your kids after school, where you, do a lot of work when you are the woman, do less when you are the man, these kind of things. So the home was like not overloaded with functions as is now. Now a home is a place where you work, obviously, where you have to teach your children, and also where you have all the other functions that you had before. So that changed radically. The other thing that we saw that due to confinement, obviously the neighborhood of a home has also received a new, I would say, importance. Because when you are on the countryside, and obviously there you have a lot of green space and free space, it's quite easy to get out and have fresh air and, move a bit around. When you are in a densely built city and you are far away from all the green spaces, then also this is becoming a challenge. So we've seen a change not only in the functionality of homes in themselves, but also when it comes to the neighborhood around this home. So that's one very first answer to your question, I would say. On a more general level, obviously, we will see that as housing systems differ a lot across Europe, across its cities and regions, and we see that there are quite stable and safe and secure systems in housing, in models, and there are also more fragile systems. And the corona pandemic has clearly also shown us the fragility of such system. They have been put very much under pressure. The more precarious, I would say, the housing solution in a given system is, the more also people came under pressure. This is why, and coming to the last part of your question, a lot of cities and regions and even countries have made very, very strong interventions in the housing markets when it comes to protect people in their homes. We have seen a ban on evictions in many cities. We have seen more aid to subsidize rents, or we have seen moratorium on rents. We have seen a lot of activities of cities, not only in the housing itself, but also when it comes to rented places for our business. So there has been a lot of protection and a lot of intervention. And I would say that coming from Vienna, a city with a very safe and stable and secure system, those who have the most of this security, they are the best when it comes to a crisis.
Indeed. So basically my follow-up question would be on this, exactly on the link between the current crisis, housing and inequality, if you want, because already before the crisis, we could observe quite a big polarization in some of our cities, with the better off living in areas where there is maybe more green space, pollution is maybe less of a problem, transports are maybe better organized, there's also better schooling or better other type of services, and somehow other parts of the population in more, if you want, segregated or poorer neighborhood. So has this process been accelerated by the COVID, or the measures that you have just mentioned are going actually in the direction of fighting this polarization? Where do we stand in this fight against inequalities in housing?
Well, I must say that the inequalities in housing have been aggravated since many years, and key factors have been, I would say, the growing financialization of the housing markets, a lot of institutional investment on a short-term profit margin, a lot of touristification, and a lot of gentrification. And not all is homemade. A lot of these things are global developments. When it comes to inequalities, also versus systems where you have little of this. We have seen that cities with a big amount of owner-occupied homes, especially, for instance, in southern countries or eastern countries of Europe, there the precarity of paying back your mortgage has come really to the light of things due to Corona. And people could not pay back their rents, but also people could not pay back the mortgage. So we've seen the precarity increase, and that means that those who are already bad off in the beginning, like 10 years ago, poor families, overcrowded housing, unhealthy housing, housing in bad energy efficiency conditions, these kind of things have clearly been aggravated by the crisis. One aspect of inequality I must mention, and that is the gender-related aspect. Very often we have seen that the corona pandemic and the confinement rules have indeed aggravated situations where you were already a victim of domestic male violence at home as a woman. So here, protective measures, again, of cities and local authorities have been key to protect women from this very, very difficult situations. And I think that the precarity of women when they are depending on a male companion that is who is really threatening her and her children with physical or other forms of violence, that is really an issue we have to look into with much more concern after this pandemic than before.
Indeed. This comes, these last comments of yours somehow try to already portray a situation in which we really are looking at common challenges across Europe. You mentioned touristification, precarity, energy efficiency, and the need to renovate buildings and the quality of Europeans' home. What are these common challenges that Europe should take on as a concrete European mission, and without leaving it only to national or local authorities? You are also representative of one of the European capitals. So I think you clearly understand the logic of being able to design this type of policies at the local level, the subsidiarity principle, but you are the person actually that can tell us what, on top of the role of the local and regional national authorities, what Europe should do, which aspects of these common challenges should be a priorities for the European Union and European institutions.
Your question is a tricky one, David, because we all know that Europe does not have a competence in housing. This is a clear competence of the member states, and very often it is up to the local and regional authorities to deal with the topic. However, we know that the European Union policies have a heavy impact on the ability of local authorities to steer and manage and organize their housing policies back home. So one of the aspects I think is key where the EU can really deliver better than up to now is the question of deblocking investment potential. One of the main reasons why we do have such a deep housing crisis across Europe is indeed that we have seen a massive decline in investment in social and affordable and public housing in the past decade. And the amount we are talking about, when we just look back 2008, 2009, when this all really started heavily, we are talking about more than 600 billion euros in total that we are lacking in investment in social, public and affordable housing across Europe. We have seen housing construction going on, but that was very often on the, I would say, high-end and luxury real estate part of the spectrum. It was not where normal middle-class families were looking for a home, clearly. And that a lot of people now in Europe, and obviously it's clear that the lower your income, the bigger the share you have to pay for housing, but that the housing crisis has now reached the middle class is something that should be really alarming to all of us. That means that this investment issue that I've been mentioning here, there is really a lot to do. What you can do is on several fields. One is clearly the revision of the state aid rules with regard to housing, because we have seen that state aid rules currently like allow for public investment in social housing only on the grounds that it's for the vulnerable groups of society. And here we need to really have a change in the whole mindset, I would say. The mindset is housing for all. That means we have to provide for a lot of people affordable, safe and healthy and energy efficient and climate friendly housing. But that means a much bigger effort. And that means that we need to have state aid rules that allow local authorities especially to do that. That's one aspect. Another aspect would be the whole issue of how the EU in the process of the European semester does see investment. Investment in technical and social infrastructure at the moment is not as easy as one would think, because it's still seen as a part of the debt you create in a public budget. So what we need really is to have a golden rule for public investments when it comes to housing. That would be really, really useful. So deblocking investment is on several aspects, but I would say state aid and European semester rules are, I would say, key to all of this when we talk about EU contribution to better housing in Europe.
In the aftermath of the pandemic, Europe has put basically on hold both the fiscal rules and the state aid rules. So maybe there is a chance of reforming these two big dossiers and two big babies that the European Union has in order to make them more investment friendly, if you want, on this very crucial aspect.
Can I just add to that?
Sure.
Because when we talk about the economic side of housing, very often we forget that it's always a whole package, you know, a whole bouquet, I would say, a whole basket of different elements we need. And what we really forget is that we have the investment capacity on the side of the rules, the framework conditions like, you know, state aid or European semester. That's one. We have European money in this. We have EIB financing in this. We have local and regional and national funds to do that. What we very often we forget that there is one element or one actor that is really paying all the time, and that's the ones who are living in those homes in the end. So that's the people who rent or buy for owner-occupied purposes. And I think that when we open up a little bit the scope and the perception, we will also see a very strong argument for participatory approaches in housing financing and in housing management systems. So I would like to really make the point that a lot of times we talk about the money is coming from I don't know where, but it's in fact it's taxpayers' money on the one side, but it's also the money you use the home in the end, who pay for it. And I think that's important to mention.
And still on the issue of money, I like to underline that what you are asking is not necessarily only European financing, but European rules that allow financing to emerge at different level of government. So I know that now, for instance, we have the renovation wave that perhaps put some European money, and I hope that part of the next generation EU will also be used by member states in different recovery plans to address the issue of housing. But it is with the rules somehow that we can allow for more investment. But the question is, what besides public-led investment? What is the role of other actors involving in the housing market, if you want? From one side, the private sector that can lead other type of investment, but also the third sector, because we have seen a lot of development from the side of cooperatives, NGOs, associations that are providing responses, valid in some cases. So how do you see the public sector at local or at the European level incentivizing these two type of responses, the private and the third sector? Can they respond to the needs of making housing for all more affordable and of higher quality?
Yes. And I think this is also where we do see a very rich diversity of traditions and systems across European cities and regions. We do know that in Europe, a lot of cities, and together with housing associations, cooperatives, however you name them, do really struggle to create livable neighborhoods. Because it's not only about one house, one home, one, you know, walls with a roof on top of it. But it's about neighborhoods. It's about living places. So we see a lot of potential when we look across Europe, for instance, in creative financing instruments. I mean, that sounds a bit weird, maybe, creative finances, and you're immediately in a certain, some people might have certain ideas about it. But think of revolving funds, where you have, this is something which the cooperative model very often use in their own management. And very often it's also something where the law sets clear rules that as a cooperative that provides housing for people, you are allowed, obviously, to take a little bit of the rent people are paying for making a small profit, but you are not allowed to use that profit for anything. You have to reinvest it in either the maintenance or the, you know, refurbishment of a building or in the creation of new affordable and cooperative housing. So thinking of new instruments might be useful. And very often what we do forget is a house, especially when you talk about social, public and affordable housing, we are talking about decades of the life cycle of a building. And we can also, we should also try to build long-term stable financing systems around housing, because it should, you know, follow the same quality in the way we finance it. And trying to maintain a building over the, I would say, lifetime of 30, 50 years is something completely different than when you look at the private investors who are coming to our cities, who are literally buying all of it and trying to leaving after a few years because they've done their profit. So this is not interesting. What we need, in fact, is long-term, stable partners in financing housing investment and especially in housing maintenance. So here we can have lots of more models, and we know that they are around there in Europe. And I would see that, for instance, the EU could play an important role when it comes to knowledge sharing about these kind of things, when it comes to capacity building in countries where, for instance, they have in many Eastern countries and cities, they have completely lost the ability to build such sustainable housing systems because after the fall of the, you know, Iron Curtain, they sold off everything. And that led to a situation where in some of the city administrations, they don't even have the knowledge how to do it anymore. So here we have a clear role also for EU agencies, especially also EIB, to help cities and local governments to regain that expertise and capacity to do things.
This is extremely interesting also because you have, you are identifying clear policies and clear solutions. So I would like to even ask you to dig a little bit more on this because you have been coordinating the work of the EU Housing Partnership for the Urban Agenda. So perhaps on top of what you have just described, for instance, the revolving funds, you have other interesting lesson learns or takeaways that we can spread with other progressive listeners that I'm sure are with us in this very moment. So what have you learned from good initiatives that you've seen on the ground at local level?
I've seen so many. I don't know where to start, indeed. I will not do the mistake to start with Vienna, because that will make everybody jealous and sad. I do not do that now, okay?
Thank you.
But I want to mention one project I've seen in, for instance, Lisbon. In Lisbon, there is the Boa Vista neighborhood, which is a very deprived neighborhood and which is has been a long time a very poor and disconnected also neighborhood, because it's like cut off from the city center, not really connected to other parts of the city. And a lot of migrants from Africa, from the former colonies, came there and they start building their little huts of their own. And it was like a little bit illegal in the beginning, and they legalized it. But the houses were very small and very poor conditions. And they did an interesting project there, because they really managed to gather with the community to build new houses, invite people to be part of that process, those who were living there, and move them from their old and very bad little, I would say, I've seen them, that were really huts. And I think it was only the color and some will that was holding them together. And the huts were like torn away, and people were moved to the new nice houses, which were, you know, also interesting. The new houses were flexible in their whole arrangement. So you could add a room, or, you know, you could really play around with the way they were organized. And I think this is a very good project, because also it created jobs for people. They did a whole neighborhood program. I think projects like these are inspiring also to others. And I think that this is something we can learn, is there is such a diversity of experiences across Europe that there cannot be one, I would say, template, like now with the renovation wave or with the affordable housing initiative that's coming up. We don't know a lot about it, but what we would wish to is that it will be more adaptable to all these different situations we have across Europe on the ground. So, I mean, I can talk about many, many projects. And for instance, I love the Scottish housing policy, which is set up at the moment, because they are now really going away from the old right to buy system, because it proved socially and economically and also environmentally to be not really working, and bringing it back to under the control of the city and the authorities together with the tenants and the former owners. But stop selling your housing stock. That's one of the main lessons we've seen. Because what we have also seen, for instance, in places like Bratislava, this is the capital that is closest to my hometown, to Vienna. And there, after the fall of the Iron Curtain, as I said, they sold off all the flats to the former tenants, but they didn't provide for any reserves for maintenance and refurbishment and whatever. So there again, you have a lot of building blocks in Eastern countries where you can't do anything, because the strict state aid rules again prevent that people, you know, get money directly, because it could create an economic competition, I would say, situation that is not, you know, wished. But it could help, for instance, to put on such a housing model or a housing project. We could install a, I would say, cooperative management structure, and then help them with some money to reorganize and refurbish their buildings without touching, you know, the ownership structure, because that is, of course, not possible anymore. But I think that we can really introduce parts of models we've seen in other places to places where in need, and that could be very inspiring for each other. Again, here, we need platforms on European level where this kind of exchange is possible.
So I understand that there's still a lot to do, but most importantly, it makes me understand the relevance of the previous point you made of understanding the change in paradigm. So somehow of a public sector that should not only provide decent housing to the vulnerables, but should provide decent housing, full stop, for all. Voilà. In the sense, I know, for instance, that the European Pillar of Social Rights, as such, it mentioned as a right to be protected by European Union actions, housing for the vulnerables. How can we move to this new objective of housing for all? The progressives in the past have campaigned for a European deal for housing. Is it something we should, bring forward again, bring up at the next social summit? How to spice up the discussion in this domain to make people people understand that if Europe is really serious on delivering on well-being and standards of living, I think these are two objectives that are enshrined in the treaties and the treaty on the function of the European Union, then housing, it might not be a primary objective of the European Union actions, but it is necessary to deliver on quality of living and well-being of the people, because we spend so much time in our houses and our neighborhoods. So is the European deal for housing a nice framework that we should push on, and in case what should be put there? Or do you see already that the Commission Affordable Housing Initiative is going somehow in the right direction? We can work on that framework.
There's several questions in your question, if I'm not mistaken. But I think that coming to the European Pillar of Social Rights and Principle, I think 19 it is, here I would love to see a broader approach, I must honestly say. We have managed with the pillar to already leave the, I would say, very paternalistic approach of helping only very vulnerable groups and combating homelessness, which is obviously something we must do. But we have to discuss the way which is best to do it. And if you, for instance, know that in Europe, most of the people living in Europe in housing are not tenants, but are owner-occupied housing users, flat owners, there, and then we know that in cities, this is completely vice versa, because in cities, typically, you would have tenants and rental contracts rather than home ownership. So we will see that where we have the strongest and most problematic situations, we will also always have the heaviest pressure on the social housing sector. What do I mean now? I think that if you have a private sector and a public sector in the broadest sense, you have to ask everybody to contribute to help vulnerable and poor and homeless people, not only the social sector. Because when you look at cities where they don't even have any social housing or very little, I mean, Athens has 440 public social flats, Athens, the capital of Greece. 40, fini. So you understand my point. If all the homeless people in Athens now are starting to struggle about these 40 flats, that will not help them. What we need is systems where we also ask the private sector to take responsibility for common well-being, as you said, in our whole society. And that's part of the issue. I have to mention Vienna now, because in Vienna, clearly we cooperate with the private sector, but we also say, okay, you benefit from a lot of things that the city is doing, technical infrastructure, metro lines, super public transport, everything. You benefit from this. So we want to have something back from you. And that is, for instance, when we give money for a renovation of a private house with multi-apartment, we also say, okay, the condition is that you will take someone from our waiting list for social housing. So we can really start to think differently. And we must also ask the private sector to contribute. That's my point. And the other aspect is when we talk about common well-being, I think it's really good that you mentioned that, because the new Leipzig Charter, this is the new key document we do have when it comes to urban policy on European level. It says exactly that. It talks about urban development has to contribute to common well-being, but that involves activities and commitments from all stakeholders. And that's not only the public authority, that's not only the local administration, but that's obviously also the private sector. And here we have to, I think, restart a little bit the whole conversation. When it comes to housing, I would say a European deal for housing is fine. I would just go for even bigger. I would go for, why do we not set up a European cooperative for housing? Because we could set up such an organization together with the, you know, all the stakeholders and say, okay, where we have the knowledge, we take the knowledge and the expertise. And where we need the knowledge, we put the knowledge and the expertise. And we start building cooperative and public housing models all over Europe with the help of, for instance, one big organization, which is, you know, it could be a renaissance of the cooperative movement in a way that I'm dreaming of.
European cooperative for housing. I like that. And I hope you can bring forward this proposal. I'll come back to you, Michaela, in a second for maybe a 30 second of closing, in which I would like you to give us, you know, the final advice, one for, let's say, European policymakers and one for local policymakers. Mm-hmm. On the topic, on the broad topic of housing, because as we have learned, housing has a lot of interdisciplinary consequences. And while you prepare on this last 30 seconds, I would like to remind to our audience and those who have the patience and the interest to follow the FEPS talks, that if you want to hear more on this topic of affordable housing, social housing, inclusiveness in housing policy, or the renovation wave, you can search for the video conference of the Housing Week that the Party of European Socialists at the Committee of the Regions is organizing in partnership with FEPS, with the City of Vienna, and with the S&D Group, as well as you can have a look at the publications that FEPS and partners is launching on concrete actions for social and affordable housing in the EU. You can find all the details on FEPS website. And to conclude this podcast, Michaela, your two cents, if you want, big recommendations for the European policymakers and for local policymakers. Be bold.
I am very bold, so no problem. Let's take housing as a right seriously. Let's stop everything that takes housing as a commodity. And that means let's stop money laundering. Let's stop financialization. Let's stop illegal touristic use of housing, and let's empower cities to help their citizens to grow together in a participatory approach in their cities and to make them livable places.
Thanks a lot, Michaela. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy your homes.
Thank you for your attention. If you found our conversation interesting, do not hesitate to share it on social media with the hashtag FEPS Talks. More is yet to come. Stay tuned.